Hey, everybody. So this is really weird because I have a yoga poem and I have a Prince poem. And I didn't plan it, so, but anyway. So I used to do yoga for quite a while, and the one thing I struggled with was being in the moment and stillness and focus. And I got the physical part of it somewhat down, but then, you know, the whole meditation and spiritual aspect I struggled with because my mind was, you know, I had a short attention span because that's why I write poetry. And just trying to focus on one thing and all that type of stuff. So this poem is about that experience, trying to focus and totally failing. So this is called Zen or the Art of Trying Harder. And I'm dedicating this to Ellen. When the yoga instructor tells me to relax, she uses the word vinyasa, and that almost helps. As I unfold the jigsaw puzzle of my body, the old house of my bones creaking. But it's okay, because this is gentle yoga, meditation for the inflexible. And I know this act has something to do with forgiveness. What it means to turn away from those full-body mirrors and watch the face of that tinsel-haired grandmother doing Warrior II. Comfortable in the weather of her skin, the calm blades of her wrinkled palms pressing the sky. I feel red-faced and dizzy, but I'm ready to suck my gut in, sweat into the darkness of my clothes and breathe. She wants us to concentrate. Imagine the draperies of our eyelids heavy with closure. But when she says lotus, I see gas bill. When she says mimosa blossom falling, I see brake fluid rainbowed into a pool under my car, sharp gravel under my knees, the curse of a wrench, grease burning the cuts in my hands. You're not trying hard enough, she says, and go back to that tree. But I can only think of the dead trees that stand like ghosts in our backyard, bare arms crossed out of defiance. It's the weather, I tell her. Winter just doesn't want to leave. And at home, I can't handle the quietness. I open a book on Monet, glossy pages of lavender waves, cathedrals without doors that shimmer, blur into the nothingness of an iridescent sun. Some damn perfect tree, too beautiful to be real. Thanks. So a number of my poems in my chapbook talk about my work experiences as a plumber. And a little bit of context with this poem. I was in a reading with Fred Shaw, and he was talking about like how all trades have slang, and we have our own language. And it's no different with plumbing. And the title of this poem is called Underground. And for a little bit of context with that, underground is just what you might think it is. Sewer lines, pipes underneath the ground, we would call underground. And there's also a mention of a snake, which is the sewer machine that would unclog pipes. So, underground. To break ground means to spit. Make them believe it comes natural. Your Durango strut, smooth jaw, Brillo ruff, and cut this frozen earth with pick swings, 7 a.m. You're 20 and fresh out of art school. Your masterpiece, Mystical Autumn, got an A-, but now you are the thing you do. Sweat jeweling off your boy body, a skinny, jeaned thing. Dizzy-headed, but thirsty to push a shovel down into thick clefts of strata, the harpoon in your shoulder burning. What they don't tell you in school is that you'll have to touch the snake. 50 feet of coiled steel, rust-caked from its eely bath, its shit journey down some stranger's dark hole. And when the plumber tells you to pick it up, you do as you're told, because first years are dirt. Fresh meat primed to be broken, tentacles shaking in your dirty hands, nearly snapping your wrist like a twig. You never thought you'd be here. riding shotgun in a plumbing van, its dashboard a landscape of fast food wrappers, sitting next to Stew or Bull or Jumbo, everyone with tough-sounding nicknames. Catchers mitt faces with cuds of chew. And that man called your boss with the crooked face, his fat chest laughing, its king of hell laugh, saying, this is how you learn, and good job, and keep moving. I promise to move away from the grossness, but one more plumbing pun. This is a new one also. This is called Sight of a Future. And, you know, I was always amazed, and it took a while to really find the beauty and craftsmanship in building things. But, you know, when you walk into a Target or any store, you know, not realizing the craftsmanship that goes into building these buildings. And, you know, just the thing that struck me, you know, but when I started writing this poem is I was on a hill full of dirt that became a Target. And I was there from the beginning to when it was just a pile of dirt to putting in the toilets when it was finished. So anyway, it's called Sight of a Future. In the blackness, Targets and Walmarts are still skeletons, stripped down husks of rusted steel, ripped plastic roofs that drift like apparitions. Cruel wind at 7 a.m. hits you as you watch foremen wander in muddy fog, the smoke they cough out. And you take a minute to stare at two trees, mountains of fill, the future site of the snack bar or layaway department. You stagger around in flannel, 3 days of dirty denim by chained together tools, and wait for the coffee to work. But here, instead of full sun, you get fluorescent light. You get a paint-splattered radio screaming Ozzy's Crazy Train, Hendrix Haze, rabbit holes of reverb, theme music for your life as your boss sweats out a fifth of Jack, snaps a chalk line out for you, says, this is the center of your pipe, and don't fuck it up this time. And all you can do is stand in this trenched earth as the metal mouth swings inches past your face, digs a hole big enough for a body and 4 inches of pipe. Shit flows downhill, he says, which means it doesn't get any lower than you. It means hold your breath when the river of waste breaks through a clog, the swill of noxious death gathering at your feet, primordial muck of used condom, thousands of intestinal blockages free at last. I learned from a veteran how to survive. Rub Vicks Vapor Rub right above your lips. Double up on your gloves and just don't think about it. So I'm gonna read this one poem from my chapbook, and there's a long history in my family of alcoholism, and I can go into some of those poems in the chapbook. And this poem's about my grandfather. It's called Anesthesia. Hemp rope muscles twist, tie themselves with little effort. Just sitting here at Connolly's bar is enough to tighten the knot. Even after last call, doors locked, the ghost of his sweat haunts this oak. Worn bar tops where he rested his denim arm. Few bills earned him his medicine, amber-tinged sour mash, anything cheap, domestic, whatever was on tap. Clank of dirty glassware, laughter, ripped leather bar stools and piss troughs at his feet. At 8, I remember how my grandfather's breath took my breath away. I wrecked my BMX in thick hollows while he fell daily in the made-up dust of B-movie westerns, John Wayne, bar fights, and gunfire. I poured Pabst Blue Ribbon in baby cups for him like my grandmother told me to. Spill-proof plastic for his shaking hands. Every time he closed his eyes, he went somewhere. Ghost towns, the bar at the end of the street. I pushed the drapes back, left his bedroom lights on so he could find his way back home. So this is a poem about not listening to your father when he wanted to impart some wisdom to you, and namely like fixing your car. And so now I'm proud to say I know how to fix some things, but I wasn't at the time. So anyway, car talk. When he was alive, I never wanted to learn the meaning of metal. Snake of a muffler underneath, chugging guttural exhaust from the rust of rot, or even the growl and crumble of brake pads, the burnt rubber smell at a stop. I see my father's face, ashy in the shadows under a hood, his tank top dotted with sweat, and I am disappearing again in the slow blur of his fender, ratchet clicks from a socket, clicking his life away, the brittle punching bag of his heart, the fist growing in the small of his back. But he works because he has to, lost in the clear coat of sea foam, Eldorado's dream. I learned then how a car can swallow a man, head first, then shoulders into the trap jaw hood, the quiet scream of the grunt, twist of a wrench, skin of a knuckle dinged, greasy fingers stained with blood. I take his 40 years into my bones and kneel today on rainy gravel, jack up my wife's Malibu and reach underneath, shine a flashlight and slide my head into the dark, the shadow above me rocking. So there's two poems left. Perhaps there's a lot of you in the audience that have had the unfortunate experience of going to Catholic school. So this is my torturous rant about Catholic school, high school, called What I Learned. I learned that when water goes down a drain counterclockwise, it either means evil is present, or it's 6 o'clock, and you would rather wash the skin off your face than get on that bus. I learned that when T.S. Eliot said, prepare a face to meet the faces that you meet, he didn't mean junior high or Clearasil. He never stared into the constellations of acne or knew that mini bus seats become black holes. I learned that school buses have windows like houses in horror movies, fogged glass that never washes off. I learned that seatbelts were left off of ours for a reason, that our driver was 80 and kept jumping the curbs on the turns on Babcock Boulevard. I learned 10 different words for horror on the ride to school, that our mothers did unspeakable things to 10th graders according to the 10th graders sitting in front of me. I learned how to disappear into music, how to burn sound into my eardrums as an offering, like how the Violent Femmes and the Depeche Mode and the Cure subway posters hanging on your bedroom wall can save you. I learned to fall in love with literature after school, how to draw words in charcoal, my art teacher praising me for my precision, and the English teacher who said I should become a novelist, that poems just don't come natural to me. I learned that nature doesn't come in a textbook or the frozen bodies of pigs we had to cut open, but in long stares out of classroom windows. I learned there was a golden city like Quivira inside me that disappeared every time the Spanish teacher asked me a question. I learned that I never had to use an isosceles triangle ever again, just that when we threw our graduation hats in the air, it reminded me of them. I learned that 30 years in Facebook has the power to forgive sins, that when the same kid who stabbed me in the eye with a pen sent me a friend request, I accepted so I can immediately unfriend him. I learned that horror movies are wish fulfillments and that most feature screaming teens running from mass murderers. I learned that Freddy always comes back. I learned that if you folded every fist and hurtful word into a poem, pretty soon you'd have a chapbook. I learned that writing is sometimes like running a treadmill or taking a shit, and both are good for you. So thank you for listening. This is my last poem. And a bunch of poets I knew were writing poems about Prince, and although I was never really into his music, I was really enamored with what I thought Prince stood for, and the symbol, what his music meant and what he embodied, and specifically like growing up and how you had, I felt like I had to hide my music, you know, and I'd watch MTV and I had headphones plugged in the television because God forbid, you know, your parents, you know, caught you watching, you know, listening to weirdos. And so, you know, my sister, I remember my sister bought Purple Rain, and when she took the LP out, you know, it was purple. I was like, wow, that's really cool, you know. But, you know, that was, you know, not really realizing at the time that, you know, the impact that music has. And then when you lose someone, you know, like Prince, it's like, wow, this is, you know, quite a blow. So anyway, this is called Rain, and again, thanks everyone for coming and listening. In his king's robe made out of stars, he waits, lifts his river of hair to stare at us, scream his beautiful mess of torture, reach his slow hand down to touch strings, make it rain for the first time. My sister hid you for months, snuck listens to Purple Rain at night, muffled your moans with low sound and headphones, the LP she slipped between a wall and a bookcase. And once, no one in the house, I found you, turned you up, not knowing what it meant to lay a needle down into a groove, set the storm inside me spinning. I was young. What did I know of closed eyes, a wet mouth, the wing of a woman's hands over my body? What purple rain means when it falls on your skin? How you never want it to stop. Thanks.